Friday Afternoon Deploy is a Usenix paper about how to build a botnet out of circuit-binded Furbies. I learned all my memes from this podcast, so yeah. It's fine.
Mm. I greatly appreciate it when he pauses what he's doing. He says, "Dad, I'm going to swear. I'm sorry." And then and then says something on the game.
He braces like, right, you man. For it.
It's all good.
Wait, he says it on the game? Like he apologizes and then types it into the game?
No. So he's got a mic. Okay. So he mutes his mic and he says, "Dad, I'm sorry. I'm going to swear." And then clicks his mic back on and then, you know.
And then like releases.
Yeah. No, it's usually like a...
You stink.
No. It's more like a reaction to something that happened to him.
I got you.
But he pauses in the moment to make sure that we're all square. But
that's anyway, fine.
That's some discipline.
Yeah,
indeed.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Indeed.
Exactly. Yeah, he's not just completely compulsive. He's got to check it and then
yeah, he's the same.
And then release it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Very courteous.
Yeah. I got in trouble playing The Witcher the other day by the wife who was like, "You're going to go outside and play if you keep this up." So I was getting frustrated.
And, my wife's playing that right now. So,
is she? Yeah. A lot of people are now with the Netflix show came out.
I bet that made it a lot more popular.
Yeah. I beat it like 5 years ago. So it's kind of fun to this new resurgence. I hear people talking about levels they're on, monsters are fighting. I'm like, oh man, I remember that. And,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm working through some of the DLC content that I've put off for years because I've also kind of got the Witcher resurgence now too.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. I've never Witchered.
It's a fun game. If you like action RPGs set in a medieval fantasy setting, it is for you.
If you like to just be able to do whatever you want when you want, it's a good game.
See, I
that you too. Don't feel it's a like massive... you have a restriction. You're like, well, I don't want to do that right now. Well, then just go do something else.
So it's open
fine.
World?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Massive.
I drown in those. Yeah. I play video games because I don't want to make choices. I want to be told what to do,
sure.
And I want to go do it, and then I want to be given the reward, and then given the next directions. Like, hey, good job. Here's a star. And I'll go do that thing.
Yeah. Witcher.
And so I'm super linear when I play games. And that really crushed me when I played Fallout. I think it was 3, whichever one was set in DC. It wasn't
New Vegas. I think that was the third one.
Yeah.
That definitely wasn't New Vegas.
But, yeah. No, yeah. I went straight through and they're just like, hey, man, you got to go find your dad. And I was like, cool, I'm going to go find my dad.
Right.
And little did I know, like, that's the last thing you do in that game.
Yeah, that's the entire thing.
And I beat my way through the sewer with a pipe wrench. To come out the other end, and then literally every time I would surface I would just get destroyed by mutants because I had nothing to get out of there. And so I was just like, well, I either have to beat my way back through the sewer with a pipe wrench or this is life now. I was like, all right, I'm done with this game.
That game's a lot like that because there's a lot of because there's a lot of stuff that you could just go find, like a lot of exploring that'll help lot. And if you do a lot of exploring, you'll basically like crush everything in your path.
Yeah, that's my strategy on those types of games, is always to level up my character. And then, you know,
you just get good enough swords and you just cut through everything.
That makes sense.
And awesome. Then I've been playing with it. It's got a setting to like scale the game to my level. And so I can go back to where I'd started and do some of those old quests. And they're still challenging.
Yeah, just keep it going.
Which is really fun. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
See, I'm getting used to that kind of stuff. So I've got an Oculus Quest, and that's the main way I game these days. Actually, based on kind of a conversation a couple weeks ago, I actually pulled down Unity and tried to to create stuff. And I did. I created a world, and I was just like, look at me. I'm in a virtual world I created. I'm going to throw a ball. And I was like, cool. That's awesome. But I didn't have any inspiration for a game, so...
I think that's half the problem when it comes to game programming.
Oh, absolutely.
I've done a little bit of it, and it's like, well, I've got the programming chops for this, and I understand a lot of the math. Let's make something. And then I'm like, well, what do we make?
Yeah, exactly. Someone inspired me, though. Was it you? Play some racquetball.
Yeah, Austin.
Okay,
racquetball.
Yeah.
He said racquetball. I said wall ball. Let's do some wall ball.
So I'll probably do that. But what I'm adjusting to is there seems to be only two types of games these days, at least available, like to like that appeal to the modern folks. It's like a highly arcade style, play this level again, play this level right. again, and mm-hmm. get all the accolades, all the awards, play mm-hmm. it better, play it faster, or here's a world, go wander around for a while and make some toast and enjoy yourself. and that I want that medium where I've got something linear, but it goes for a while in a specific direction.
Okay. Mm.
So I like that gameplay. Like Moss is probably in the Oculus and Steam. Well, more Oculus and Steam. Steam's got a lot more options, but it's a really linear game, and it's not the best VR experience. But for me, it was like I can sit and I can play through it, and I love it, and it's good. But I play through a game and I'll play through it and I'm just like, I played through that in like 2.5 hours, 3 hours of gameplay. Yeah. And there's like, no, but you didn't get all the things. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm going to play the things, same level. Yeah. It's the same thing that makes me not want to reread a book. No. I love a book. Yeah. Very few books I reread.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I've reread some and I enjoy those that I do, but I'm generally not one to be like, oh, I want to read that again. I'm just like, I read that once.
Right.
I don't need to read it again. Yeah. I do that with games. I played through that once.
I don't replay often either. I wish I could do VR, though. It makes me super sick in my stomach. I get motion sick in a hurry. But I play it without my glasses on, and that might be it. Because all of the headsets smash my glasses.
Sure.
And so I tried
There's
to play
adapters
Skyrim.
You can put on them.
Yeah, okay.
That, like, extend it.
I tried to play Skyrim, and the opening scene, just the cart, I'm just couldn't do it. It's the worst. I got so sick.
Especially super sick. That scene, because you're riding.
Exactly.
Yeah, I could definitely see the car sickness in that, yeah. I played Tyrells a few times. I haven't gotten too seasick with it. I wear contacts a lot of the time, though. I don't know if that has much to do with it or not.
Yeah.
I bet that helps. Yeah,
the Vader Immortal. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's good times.
The Jedi Dojo.
Who doesn't want to be a Jedi?
Right? Who doesn't want to wield a lightsaber? That was awesome.
It's good times.
Yep.
So prototypes.
Prototypes. Oh, man.
Good segue.
Right into it.
Yeah, that led right here to where we are now.
Yeah. So, real quick, I'll take the time to go over everybody we got in here. So, we've got Alan.
Here I am.
One of our regulars, and Willow as well, Tyrell. That's me from the Lofty team. And we're glad to have Christopher Hobbs back with us.
Mm-hmm.
Greetings.
And we're going to drag him through some JavaScript related stuff because we've been there recently and he has not.
Yeah,
and so
I'm gonna learn today.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know anything about anything that you sent me. So
yeah, that's good. No, so Willow brought up prototypes, and so we've been going through a book club here at the office, going through an object oriented programming in Python book. That's almost the name of it.
I'm gonna add that to Safari right now.
Python 3. Python 3 object-oriented programming, I believe, yeah, by Dusty something.
Yeah. So we're reading, sorry, Dusty. Yeah.
we'll find it.
We'll put you in the show notes. We've been reading our way through that, and they've got a big chapter on design patterns.
Dusty Phillips.
There it is. Dusty Phillips.
All right, it's on my bookshelf.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good read.
Yeah, it's actually really good. We've enjoyed it and like just had good stuff to talk about on a pretty much weekly basis, although schedules sometimes shift that around a little.
Yeah, it's it goes pretty basic to data types and stuff like that, which you said you kind of went through.
Yeah, I went through.
We skipped over some of that. And then gets into design patterns, which I really like at the end. It's got two chapters on design patterns. Yeah.
Yep. And so we were digging into those and reading through kind of different ones, and they did not reference the prototype pattern in there. But conveniently, Willow had found an article on a website called Django Spin that went over kind of the Gang of Four.
Is the prototype pattern on C2? I'm going to pull the phone up again.
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure. But it's definitely like the blog post, at least, that we were at was breaking down all of the Gang of Four design patterns within the context of Django. And so I went and bought myself a copy of the Gang of Four design patterns book.
Very good.
Because I realized I did not have that, and that needs to be that needs to sit right.
You keep saying Gang of Four, and I was like, huh. And as soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, I've got that book.
Yeah, the programming.
Yeah, that's a great book.
That needs to go next to my leather bound copy of Mythical Man Month.
I forgot they switched C2 over to Ward's new JavaScript-based wiki, and so now I can't figure out how to navigate it. But I'm sure it's there. Portland Patterns Repository, all of that C2.net has all been ported over. C2.com, sorry, has all been ported over to Ward Cunningham's Fed wiki.
Nice.
Which is now written in JavaScript. It was initially a Sinatra project, and he abuses cross-site scripting to get things done, which I think is actually kind of cool. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
So we took advantage of the fact that we found prototype patterns discussed in the context of Python and Django, and had a hearty discussion around that, because that's not something. Obviously, Python is a very classical inheritance focused language, whereas JavaScript is not.
No, it is. It is a prototypical. I've been trying to say that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say prototypical, but that's everywhere I see it.
That's what I said earlier.
Everywhere I see it written, it's prototypical, which just sounds like nipple or something. It's not it's not fun to say for me.
Nipple.js.
Yeah. there's one out there probably.
Don't
if not there is now.
Don't search that at work.
But yeah, you know, because I've banged my head against it a few times. I know I was in React one time and got a bright idea of like, oh, I'll make some new views that'll inherit from these other views, and just like in Django, and it didn't work that way, and so then I had to kind of dive into prototypical inheritance a little bit, see how that works, and yeah, you can only go one deep with that.
Well, you can extend object on object on object, and so you end up.
But I guess from the doing it. As you would do classical inheritance, because you can do, I'm using air quotes, classical inheritance using JavaScript.
Yes.
You have to use their dot prototype method on their object to be able to do that. And then you could extend it like that.
They
were showing how you could do mix-ins like that too as well.
And
I was like, whoa, yeah.
Could you not call prototype on a prototype? This is where we need Blake.
Yeah.
Because we don't know JavaScript.
Yeah, this is beyond me, man.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Because, you know, you got the built-in object, like you do in every object-oriented based language, object.prototype. And so they were showing you could do object.prototype, and if you already have an object, you pass that into prototype. Create, I think. And then that... would create a new object based upon that object. And that was kind of how they were showing you could do classical inheritance like that.
Yeah. And then it was so gnarly when they were showing you the classical version.
Yeah. That's the one thing about the ES6 syntax that makes it look like what we expect to see in like a C language. But it's all it is wrapping those object.prototype calls like in a nice little syntax. Sugar wrapper.
There has to be a library at this point that's like classicalinheritance.js.
I like
it, that you could just,
I wouldn't be surprised,
because I was telling Hobbs about the Python one that I ran into, that was like, oh, that's just
and so you abuse your classical inheritance and turn it into prototyping.
One of them that I saw, somebody had overwritten like I don't think I've ever used it. The dunder dash new method that in a Python object in a Python class, and so that would get called before init. So if you needed to do some bootstrapping of your object before init even gets called, you can do that in the new method. So they overrode that to basically make prototypical inheritance work with a Python class like it does in JavaScript. Like that. So,
well, if it's written well, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, because all these patterns are rarely optimizations for a machine. It's optimizations for the human mind.
True.
So if it makes things easier to read and easier to understand for a team, and the library is not written too poorly, I don't see any problem with that.
And I think the first part of what you said there is key. That's something we had talked about in the book club. Like, if it's optimal for your team, then yeah, why not? Because I was saying, like, let's not all go deep on prototypes in Python, because, like, then if you pass it off to an old Python programmer, they're going to look at it and go, what is this?
Yeah. And that sort of thing can fall apart under a time crunch. You can write the cleanest code in the world on a normal daily basis, but the minute someone lights something on fire, that all goes out the window.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. Terrell, you're over there Googling something?
No. I'm feeding a baby bird.
Drift. Yeah, it's doing some homework, sort of. Yeah.
Kind of. Working some...
As you were, sir.
Keeping some folks alive. Yes. Keeping some folks
productive. Keep them fed there.
Find that pattern on the index of patterns on C2.com. Mm. But I'm sure it's in there somewhere. Somebody has to have argued about it. Probably. I'm pretty sure that they froze a lot of the edits and discussions, though, because it was victim to a lot of abuse. And they had to restore it several times. Because I don't know if it was the first wiki or it was one of the first wikis, but they did not alter its code base until recent years. So I mean, they have a whole section for the Gang of Four even, so there's lots and lots and lots of patterns discussed there.
I can imagine. Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see that one, the prototype one, implemented in Python,
right,
like that. We also talked about the observer pattern today.
I've done some observers. I don't know. Sometimes it's useful and concise, and then sometimes you end up with God objects where it just gets out of control, and you think, well, I've already got these observers. I might as well just keep using them, and then, you know, you add more and more and more and more. But, yeah, I don't see any problem with it. Again, it depends on your team.
Yeah.
Trying to think of my favorite patterns. Most of my favorite patterns are refactoring patterns.
Your favorite,
yeah, we do a lot of, you know, extraction methods and stuff like that. But I think the pattern I use a lot in object-oriented senses, and maybe it's just because the work that's been put in front of me, is factory patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I abuse it, but I use the heck out of it. My brain works well with that. And I think it fits well with object-oriented programming.
Yep. I love doing it in Python, too, with, like, a dictionary.
Certainly.
And then, that's the first time I'd ever saw that. I think Casey had written some code like that. I was like, what is this doing? And then they walked me through it, and I was like, actually, that makes tons of sense. Yeah, because then you can have your default down there. It's almost like a case statement like that, but that's usually how I end up actually implementing
it. But who needs case statements, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We have go-to.
I miss them. I miss my case statements. Do you? That's like the literal...
You could probably write
the only things I miss.
You could write a Python library probably for that.
I should.
Or the hood would.
I'm ignorant here. Did Python get rid of case statements?
I don't know if have we ever had case statements?
No.
And what about switch? I mean, case and switch are the same thing.
Yeah. Never been switch.
Okay. Yeah. Nope.
No. Interesting. I don't use it enough to know.
Yeah. So. I was about to say, because you've been Pythoning for the last 6 months.
Yeah, roughly. But it's all procedural. Well, I guess, it's all imperative. There's some object-oriented stuff, but it's all imperative.
Yeah, sure. Guido said we just need if and else statements.
Yep.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
But right.
Yeah. No.
But I don't think he's right.
He just grew an inch. Wherever he's at, he's just like,
somebody challenged me.
Got excited. That's one of the things that I miss from Ruby was case statements. I know. I always, that's like my go-to, if only I still had this. I like the way those feel. But it's all about dictionaries.
You can do it with a dictionary, though.
Yeah. I'd much rather use the dictionaries. It's so much cleaner and just better.
See, that's the first time I've heard someone who's come from Ruby be like, I like the Python way better.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty
into it. Yes. Given to your hate. Yes.
Which it does explain, too, why I haven't used it in Python. Because these days I'm using 3... sometimes 4 languages, and the others have switch and case, and I explicitly remember using it in the others, but don't remember using it in Python. But that may also be because the code base I'm learning in, well, I'm not really so much learning, I'm learning Python 3 as opposed to 2, but it doesn't exist anywhere. Yeah, I came into this with Python 2.7, and everything mostly works, everything I know mostly works, but every now and then I run into something that's not right. And it takes me a minute to figure out what I did wrong.
There were subtle changes at first. Like one of the big changes I know about now that I kind of evangelize is the path lib built-in library I really like.
I appreciate you evangelizing that because I always forget it, having spent a lot of time in 2.7.
Yeah.
And then when I came to Lofty, got to like
do the move OS on up dot,
to yeah. Python 3, and I was like, oh. And he was like, man, PathLib.
Yeah. I mean, I still sometimes will do it, catch myself OS dot, still, and then I'm like, ah, no, there's a object like based.
I spend at least, if I don't go with PathLib and I just kind of forget it exists, I spend at least half an hour trying to figure out the best way to access a file before I remember PathLib. I'm just like, wow,
what's this stupid
file?
Yeah.
Importing all the like sys and just so much nonsense.
I wish they would port that. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I could try to do a PR or something on Django, see if I get in there, but remove from the settings the OS baster, like make that PathLib.
Baster.
Yeah, old baster.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you need to make a library.
Yeah. Well, there already is one, but I could put that.
Not with your name on it. Not invented here.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Speaking of patterns.
Got to get that open source cred.
Yeah.
And you can go to do all your conference talks.
Yes.
Put that. And then you can write an O'Reilly book.
Ah.
And then profit.
Yeah.
That's how
it
works.
I can write an O'Reilly book. I can write a PACT book. I can write a...
Writing those books is no joke, man. I know two people that have wrote them and...
Yeah.
That sounds like real work.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't envy that at all.
No. And then nothing but, you know, answering challenges for the rest of your career, basically.
Absolutely.
Right? That's exactly right. Man, I watched the video. I posted it in our book channel, and I think I sent it to you because I was washing dishes to it last night and watching a guy talk about prototypical inheritance versus classical inheritance. This was in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
It was a JavaScript developer working for Adobe who'd written a book that was about to be published by O'Reilly about building stuff in JavaScript. And he gave a talk on prototypal inheritance and a library he had created called Stampit. So those who are curious can go put all those pieces together. The video's on Vimeo. Oh. Stupid autocorrect in my brain.
Who do you owe money to?
You mean money, not movies. Vimeo. But he gave this talk, and it was a very informative talk. It wasn't my favorite talk ever, but like it taught me a ton of stuff. And so I had like kind of my personal criticisms, as everyone can kind of like have as they're watching the video. And then I noticed like he got done with his talk, and there was like 15 minutes at least left. I was just like, oh.
People slamming.
He got a Q&A coming in hot. And sure enough, I went to Q&A. And man, those JavaScript bros tore him apart. They did not come at him with questions. They came at him with accusations.
Naturally.
They were just like, oh, I see you've done this. This breaks this and this. Yeah. And he would be like, oh, does it? And they're just like, yeah, I mean, this is broken now. You can't do this thing. You can't call is instance of. And
so did he so he's not just like, publish his book then, or did it get published?
I assume it got published. Okay. I assume. I haven't looked for it. But then like he's like, well, let me check that. And then he's like live coding with a gun to his head the conference and apologizing because he's like, wait, I'm in the wrong directory.
It was just
so he finally gets through proving that this guy was right. Unfortunately, and was just like because he tries to like be like, well, you know, everybody loves watching people live code. Blame that guy, ha! And then like, oh wait, he was right. And then like next dude up's like, oh, also you broke this because the sharks smelled blood in the water.
Yeah.
So the next three guys told him all the stuff his library had broken.
How horrible!
And poor guy. Like, oh my gosh. Oh, it's so savage. I felt bad for him. I was trying to like help him because someone was just like, what do you do? Because he was leveraging it was prototypical inheritance in his own library to kind of make it more efficient. Really established guy, like seemed like a solid developer, he was talking about how he really relied on factories as well.
Right.
And someone was talking about like, well, what do you do with this if you want some special case? He's like, do you put it in a factory? as if that was a crazy statement. I was like, yes, you put it in the factory. I said that out loud, like doing dishes. And the guy on stage is like, yeah, you put it in the factory. I'm just like, see?
Put it in the factory.
You leave him alone. He's done good things. Yeah, poor guy.
Just listen for a minute.
But yeah, man, it was nuts to see them get that hostile. Mm. So I don't envy folks who write a book and just like...
have to defend their
book. Yeah, exactly. They have to like...
Well, yeah, it's almost like when you commit something to paper, like it carries more weight than if you make a crazy Stack Overflow post or you know, a forum post or just drop something in your favorite web chat. You're committing to the long haul there.
The thing is, you got to be ready for that stuff. You wrote a book. You wrote something that's supposed to fundamentally change at least somewhat the way it works. Like, you better know.
Yeah. You're a sudden expert, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Self-proclaimed, if not.
And everybody wants to take out, everybody wants to be the Kingslayer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know a better way, but your way sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, that's valid, though. Like,
it's true. That's true.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
It is easy to come with, like, your way sucks, but not like but this is better.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah. To tear down like, without an option of building
like
better.
He didn't know it was broken, but they did. Like, they may have not had a better way, but they did know that it was broken.
Well, and his point was, when they were punching holes in it, all he could do, because they were right, those things were broken, he was just like, I mean, because the first question wasn't a direct accusation, but it was like, so what are the implications for performance here?
What's the benchmarks? Yeah.
And he was just like, well, obviously this is slower. And he's like, but this is all relatively insanely fast. So if you're optimizing here, I'd argue you're concerned with the wrong thing.
Mm. Sure.
So that might have been the first drop of blood. Yeah. Because he acknowledged his code was less performant than other things. And then after that, it was just like, oh, well, this guy doesn't know what he's talking
about.
I'll
be heretical and say you don't always need performance.
But. I'm in that camp. Yeah. I really am in that camp.
That's, you know, one of the ways I evaluate performance is like you've got kind of two sides of it, right? Like one is machine performance. The other is developer performance. Like how easy is it for me to push out a feature with this code?
Yeah.
And arguably maybe that's more important than, you know, blazing fast speed on some string concatenation or something.
So what's funny is... with this talk specifically, I thought this guy was in the performance camp because the example he gave was so arbitrary and like mind-numbing to try and conceive. I was like, this guy's writing code to be more performant than it is to be like maintainable.
You're my dinner, sorry.
You're good.
Put that on the intro, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
But no, like his example was like, he said, I create object A with variable A. That is A. And I was like, oh, what?
And then he jumped the shark.
Well, then he goes, but he was talking about the way that he can extend. He was talking about how, give me a second, closures. Mm. Like with his library, you could extend different, so you could use prototypal inheritance to extend objects. And if you did it with the right closures, you know, declaring functions that would then create objects, your private data remained private.
Mm.
And so if data privacy is a concern, this is a great way to do this. And so he was just like, I create object A with variable A and equals A. And I was just like, I hate everything about that. Mm. And then he's just like, then I create project B with variable A. equal to B. And then my brain went out the back of my head.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and I'm going to create C, which is A extended by B. And I can call A and B and they're separate. And I was just like, that was like a great magic trick, but I can't use that. And it took me 20 minutes of reading your code with your video paused to really understand what you were trying to accomplish. And so what was funny was, he gave an example like that, and I actually paused it to explain to my wife. I was like, okay, you see me sitting here fuming with frustration, and it's because there's kind of two ways to optimize. You optimize for computers, or you optimize for people. Sure, me being an English major turned Ruby developer turned Python developer, I optimize for people. Mm. I optimize for developer performance over machine performance, especially like in the modern just throw hardware at it era.
Right.
And so this guy was like – at least writing code that read like someone who did stuff for machine optimization. And then the first question was, how is this performant? He's just like, well, I mean, it's nowhere near as performant as these other things. I was like, oh my God, yeah. Why are we even here?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, I defended him.
Yeah.
We came full circle.
There we did.
It was a very emotional video.
The optimization thing reminds me about, you know, so I was diving into Rust, a couple weekends ago. Have you?
I've not used Rust. Short of just hello Rust.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that's about it.
Yeah. I haven't done much.
I know
more
of
than
it.
That.
I've run a couple of things.
Yeah.
Otherwise I haven't.
I made some structs and was like, yeah, cool. It's like C, just kind of like Go. But the cool thing about Rust is it's kind of neat how it gives you so much control over memory in a couple of ways. Like one of the things you can define a thing called a lifetime, and so that will be, you know, you're defining how long does this live in memory, like, and it gives you that much control over your optimization. So it's just kind of cool to play in that world and then live in an interpreted language kind of world, full time. But I was looking at a couple of different web frameworks written in Rust. One is Rocket, which kind of seems to be the Django in that world, full featured. And then there's Actix, I think is what it's called. So Rust has this thing I don't fully understand called like Actors, and so this is a web framework that's like built solely upon that. Apparently it was started by some members that worked at Microsoft. Like, it's not an official Microsoft project, but some of the folks that work at Microsoft worked on this. And then I got to reading further, and apparently the head guy abandoned it because of a toxic work environment or something. So I don't know what the state of that is, but it made me think of it because you look at, there's a site out there, you can look up web framework benchmarks. If you Google that, you'll find it. And this library is at the top above C, even like fast HTTP written in C. The test is, they call it Fortunes. And so it'll create a token, put a token in a Postgres database, like get said token. So it's basically testing the round trip that you can do and how performant that is. And this library apparently is you know, miles ahead of some others out there, but then people are pointing out that that's because, like, it apparently the way some of the code practices that they're using in the framework could be considered dangerous and stuff like that.
That's,
and I'm like,
a big word.
I know, and I don't know what that, you know, dangerous for the hardware, dangerous for the, you know, for the data. I don't know, right?
You get swatted when you implement it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Kick in your door and come for you.
Yeah, exactly. You're deemed an enemy of the state.
Yeah.
Come and get you.
You're on a list now.
Yeah, we're all on a list now.
Yeah. You've just let everybody know about it.
Yeah. So that's that was kind of interesting. That came to my mind. Because I was like, ooh, this is blazing fast. And then had to kind of back up a little bit and go, oh, but at what cost, though?
Because I learned harmful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm no computer scientist where I don't know. I might be using it in melting metal. I don't, you know, if that's the danger or not. But just thought I'd throw that out there because I like to talk about Rust every once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I explored Rust up to that point and then kind of backed off from it a little bit.
Rust became dangerous.
As I kind of knew it was because like it has integer types of like, is this an unsigned 8-bit integer? Is this a signed 8-bit integer? Is this an unsigned 16-bit integer up to, 64-bit? And so that's a fun world to play in. But boy.
Rust got on my radar because of a grep replacement. I use a Python-based grep replacement, Silver Searcher.
Yeah.
And Rust
has... Is
that
written in Rust?
No, there is a Rust equivalent
of that. Oh, it's Python-based.
There's a Rust equivalent of that somebody at work had mentioned to me, and I thought, oh, people are using Rust for real things. But of course they are, but it was never on my radar, and so it was an exciting moment. And I didn't go as far as you did. I just... Like I said, hello Rust, put some data structures together, we did the thing, it compiles.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's the Rust Silver Searcher?
Oh, I don't remember. I'd have to get my work laptop out. I want to say it's RG instead of AG. Right. So AG is Silver Searcher, but I think it's RG And it has a couple of extra neat knobs on it, like you can ignore lines of a certain length and that kind of thing, which is really useful when you've got gigantic like JSON dumps.
I was just saying that
I stumbled into
that's useful, cool. Yeah.
I stumbled into a useless statement. I think you told me about, you turned me on to Silver Searcher. I think you were also the one who turned me on to Glances. Don't you use Glances?
I do.
Yeah.
I use Glances quite a lot. Oddly enough, I mostly use the web interface on it, to put on a screen so I can monitor a couple of the boxes I have at home. Yeah.
Interesting. Hmm. I didn't know Glances had a web interface.
Yeah. Me. So you just give it a port, and an address to bind to, and you can pull open a web interface.
So Glances is an HTOP. Substitute.
Replacement, yeah. Correct. And it's got some extra...
Oh, that's kind of cool. So you could have a web interface to see your
HTOP. And the layout's a little different, but the reason I do that is so I can pull it up on my phone, for example. If there's something with some high load, I've got some network monitoring equipment that occasionally goes nuts whenever I download a torrent or something like that, and it screams at me. So I go check the load on that box, and I can just pull it up on my phone.
He already knows he's on
several.
Chris is all about that list life.
Multinational. Yeah. I collect them. You know? Always looking for things to say to get added to another list.
Yeah. Keep them guessing.
I'm a team player.
Yeah.
But it's pretty neat. You can bind it to a port and see a web interface, and you can customize it too. It does a little extra things that HTOP may not do. If HTOP does them, I just haven't recognized it yet.
I know
it's a Python project.
It's got some good Docker related support.
It does.
For sure.
Oh, that's cool. So you could glean what's happening inside of a Docker container.
Yep. I underutilize it. I know that much. I still use it like I would HTOP, but I don't have it idling in a terminal like I should to be able to actually use it to monitor stuff.
It makes a pretty good dashboard too. If you just need general system specs, you guys have talked exhaustively on this podcast about how we don't have our bespoke servers anymore with, you know, pet names and things. But once in a while you have one of those, and if you do, it makes a good dashboard for that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was like, what would I monitor? I was like, my computer? No.
Yeah.
I guess, but you're right.
All computing these days is disposable, it seems like. But once in a while you've got one
sticks around.
Like your Retrocade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or the iMac when
this guy. This is our
this guy when our podcasting machine falls over.
Yeah.
Or
the Parappa that we use it's a Slack interface that we can do clip, and then we have MP3s in an S3 bucket that'll pull down and play over the Sonos.
I've used it on access points before too. I had a couple of Ubiquiti access points that I put OpenWRT on, and there was a Glances package for OpenWRT, and so every now and then I would use it to monitor my access points, because it's pretty low overhead. I mean, it has to be to monitor the system. You know, you don't want that to contribute to your load. So
That's written in Python.
It is. And I'm not even sure what it's using for the web interface, if it's a framework or anything.
But yeah. If I had to guess, it would be Flask.
That's what I'm thinking, but I have no idea. But I don't know how fast Flask is. Again, all of the Python I've been doing lately is standard library and imperative, and so I don't get to use fancy things like that.
But. You mentioned a couple. You're in like three languages these days. What are the other ones you're getting?
Four. Golang, C++, Python, and our own domain-specific language called ZeekScript, which is for analyzing network data.
Okay.
It's got neat things like IP-based data types, like host name is a type, IP address is a type, ports are types, that kind of thing. And it's got all kinds of interesting bells and whistles. It lacks some features that a more general purpose language would have, but that's at Zeek.org. It's all open source. So those are the four I've been using lately. Don't have a clue what I'm doing, but we're getting there. I mean, I know Go. I know Go pretty well.
Okay.
And I knew Python too, so that was a good start, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then diving into Zeek was relatively easy because it's got a small instruction set, or function set rather. C++ and Python 3 have been a bit of a dive for me to figure out. So
I was diving into some C++ just for fun a couple weekends ago to, you know, live that life a little bit again, to come back to work and go, oh man, I love Python.
That's something I do really miss. I work on these appliances now that, that customers have that are out of band and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I get virtual appliances, you know, I get to spin those up and they're cool, mm-hmm. but they're the same limitations as the hardware. And so mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. I want to make things, I got to understand that eventually these are going to get shipped out. Right. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I can't just keep piling things onto them. So I do miss the ability to say, I need this bloated library or that bloated yeah. library because it makes mm-hmm. my code pretty or whatever, you know.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting constraint to work within. Yeah.
Very.
I know we that was something that with well, one of our other clients.
Yeah. That way. I was going to say
we had appliance installations. So we always had to keep into account, like, and they actually didn't seem to care too much about yeah. about it, because the way that their appliances were installed was it was a Docker container wrapped with Golang to like mm-hmm. launch the Docker container and then like make it sit and idle and then redirect traffic to the on the local network to that appliance, to that Docker image. And so there wasn't the same constraint of don't add new libraries, but it was always just make sure that's in the Docker file so that all those libraries are there, like bundled up in there, so that it can inflate.
Yeah, we're not, somebody had to be on site to install
yeah,
it.
That, yeah. Yeah, that's our thing. We're not super draconian about it, but a lot of almost all of our appliances sit out of band with the network.
Yeah.
Because it passively consumes network traffic. Mm. So if you have an update like that, somebody has got to plug that thing in or plug a USB stick into it or something like that, and so you're making their lives difficult. But that being said, most of the people who are using our appliances are not messing with the code on the appliances. They're just using it as an appliance. So it's only a hindrance for development, but you learn to work around it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True. Anything exciting going on in that? And that sphere these days?
I think that Zeek itself is really cool. I mean, I'm not here to plug the company, but...
Plug away.
Yeah, so it's not an IDS. It's a network analysis framework and scripting language. And it's not packet-based, it's event-based. So, and it clusters well. So that's been an exciting thing, working in a distributed environment where the nodes may not know that the other nodes exist.
Right.
And that, you know, you may end up with the same data. It depends on what happens. And so trying to break apart and reconstruct data has been interesting. But it's very cool. As far as when I was interviewing for the position, I told them that, so it's been around for about 25 years. It was formerly known as Bro. And given bro culture, they decided to rename it because that was bad. And so I told them I was surprised I didn't know it existed because of all of my security work and that I absolutely hate it because it makes it impossible to do things that I like to do, like hide my traffic in DNS traffic, for example, or do squirrely SSH things, because it collects all of the network traffic and correlates it into really useful logs where it makes it easy to peg traffic as, hey, that's really weird. But again, it's not packet-based, which is what I think is interesting, especially if you pair it with a packet-based IDS. You've got multiple views into your network then.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's very cool. And then we typically will throw it into, you know, modern data stacks, you know, like I've seen it in Elk before, I've seen it in like Kafka and stuff like that. And our clients will, or not even our clients, but the open source community, I've seen them toss it into Redis or Postgres or whatever, and or spew it out to just traditional log files or spew out JSON, however they want to consume it, and then put it into their sim and track it. So it's really neat. Yeah, Zeek.org, and it's on GitHub, github.com/Zeek. And I made a separate GitHub account for the company because I didn't need all the trash on my personal account to follow me to follow me around. I did put my name on both accounts just so, like, if you're looking for me, this is me. But it's not as obvious that, like, getting commits into garbage like Devolution X, the Diablo rewrite. I was a little embarrassed that was my only C++ contribution to the world is adding some stuff to the loader for Devolution X. But check it out.
We'll do.
Yeah, no doubt.
We just had an NPR moment.
Yeah, we did. That was
good time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
A little tease for the non-patrons. Casey and I don't know if you guys got to hear this. Casey and I did a deep dive of NPR lore last week. We got bored in intro creation and just started.
That's the kind of thing that happens when NPR. Your guests don't know what the hell you're talking about, right?
I mean, our guests were gone. It was just Casey and I. And so, like, we had no excuse other than we had mics just in front of us.
Finished the beer.
And we both worked in public radio and public TV. Mm. And a lot of fresh air references and things like that. So, what do you think? Like, surely a significant amount of programmers or NPR listeners, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Probably 80%.
80%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a bit these days.
Yeah. We definitely have a type, we programmers. Though it
does definitely
diverge.
Don't.
You don't?
Nope.
Have a type.
Like, you're very anti
NPR. Yeah.
I don't listen to NPR.
Or both.
Are you anti NPR? It's okay if you are.
I don't know. I just.
Just not your thing.
I don't think that. I'm not going to share any of my opinions.
No, that's you. And that's totally okay too. No worries.
I gave up on NPR because of the pattern. Like, it's very, like you say, there's a very specific way that they sound, and after a while, it was just really grating.
Yeah, well,
and so I can't listen to like This American Life anymore because I can almost call his pauses and stuff. Ira, I can almost call all of his pauses and whatnot. I'm just like, I can't do it.
My sister is a big NPR fan, and every time she has it on in the car, I'm just like, please, just play music.
Okay.
So what's funny is you mentioned This American Life. I've started listening to a podcast called Darknet Diaries.
Cool.
Mm. And it's just infosec stuff told by someone who wants to be like Ira Glass.
Mm.
It's all it is. I mean, I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing it. But it's like this guy studied at the Ira Glass School of Podcasting. And he does his whispering. He does his intros. He makes his same Ira Glass style jokes. I was like, yeah, all right.
Man, I saw Ira Glass on something I was watching the other day and like was like, I know that voice. I don't remember what it is, and that sucks that I brought it up.
Were you in Whole Foods?
No, it was on probably. It was on like Netflix or something. I was watching some special, and I was like, who is that guy? I know that voice. And then they got him in a booth, and I remember he was like, this is Ira Glass. I was like,
there it is.
Yeah.
So. As far as media goes, there's a balance between being stupid and bombastic, like most media is, and then being like NPR, making people want to fall asleep.
Yeah.
You need it.
For sure.
You need in the middle. You need like real news and then some funny moments, but nothing too crazy or stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. It can't be
sensationalized.
Yeah. Yeah. It can't be like a, you know, for the sake of sensation. Itself, the act, I'd say. Yeah.
That's why I get all my news off Facebook.
Ah, a reliable source.
I don't even look at the news anymore. In fact, I was thinking Facebook, about this this morning when I sat down at my computer.
We're all non-Facebookers, I'm pretty sure.
To get we got to have the rant, the Facebook rant. Yeah. Facebook,
We joked about making you create a fake Facebook account.
No, I'm good.
On this episode. No, we're going to make Chris sign up for Facebook.
I logged into a Google account the other day and it hurt. I could feel the burn. But no, as far as news, like I don't pay attention to the news anymore. In fact, I was recognizing that when I sat down this morning and started up the old computer and the coffee. And the first thing I did was go to the ACM Digital Library. And then I went to LWN, the Linux Weekly thing. Yeah. And then opened up, what else did I do? A bunch of kernel announcements. Oh, by the way, there's a new version of OpenSSH out that will let you use your YubiKeys when you generate keys. So that's cool. I learned that this morning.
Nice.
So yeah, it's all been just, but part of that's been my current work. I've had to learn so much that it's my news time has been replaced with just really, really dry white papers and stuff like that. Yeah.
If you're in white paper land, that's
that's
the ACM level. Digital Library is pretty cool though. However, they do not support open access, so I'm really upset with my membership there. However, Usenix is rad, and if you guys get, you talk about the security thing, if you get the opportunity, the Usenix Security and Privacy Summit for 2019 was in December, I think. They've released all of the papers from that, and there is some crazy, crazy stuff going on with regards to cell phones and things like that. Yeah, lots of good papers there, and you don't even have to read the whole thing. You can skim it. Also, of course, the Chaos Communications Congress happened, as it does every year. Yeah,
late December, right?
Every Christmas.
Oh, is it literally Christmas?
Literally Christmas.
And I knew it was around Christmas.
Yep, they finally got all the videos out, and there are some very, very cool videos out. media.ccc.de on that one.
I think, did you send me the one about... I think you sent me one that was a CCC video about ghost profiles.
Yes.
Yeah, that was...
Absolutely.
That was... I had thankfully left most social media, except for those that I know are fully projecting everywhere. Mm. And then I watched that, and I was just like, shut everything! Turn all the... Unplug everything! Oh, my God!
Well, the nice thing about the CCC, the Congress is not only security. Like, I learned a little bit about mission control, NASA mission control. They had one on rocket science, and, like, how they get a rocket into orbit. I learned about stuff like escape velocity and how they control it and how it goes from center to center. So yeah, and then there's cool stuff like people smuggle computers out of the DPRK and naturally put them in a Faraday cage so it can't phone home, and then they check out the OS on it and all the stuff that's on there. Yeah, it's called Red Star OS. That's what the North Koreans have on all their equipment.
Wow, it's pretty cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I like talks like that.
Yeah,
I like, that's one of the things when I was at Strange Loop, the two keynotes.
I still hate you for getting tickets, dude.
You got to go. You got to go this year.
Every year I've tried to get tickets and they sell out before I get them. I'm probably going to go to Shark Fest this year, though. So
Shark Fest.
Wireshark, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wireshark. That makes
sense.
That's
what I figured. Yeah.
No, this year, the two keynotes, one was a guy from, he wasn't from NASA, but he was monitoring space trash, basically. He worked at UT Austin and he was looking at software to like monitor what was in orbit and how to track all of that. And so he was just explaining that from a super non-technical level, but still it was just fascinating to watch him like talk about everything that was debris and how it was tracked and how it was reported, and like just recognizing how much junk is just floating in orbit, like dead satellites, or like this dead satellite hit that one and now there's just this streak of
debris.
There's a website that'll let you visualize all of the, I think it's spacejunk.com. Look, it's really cool. You can see all the just many thousands of things floating around.
Yeah, and there's so much of it they don't even know what it is. He's just like, he hit a button and he's like, all of this is all UFOs. And that was a really awesome talk. And then Imogen Heap gave a talk.
Oh, cool.
About the stuff she used to create music. Mm. Which she obviously had no idea how it was created, simply like the implications of it, like the gloves. She's got some gloves that she can put on and she sings and does things with her hands and she'll like play songs, which is crazy to watch.
Kind of like a theremin.
Yeah, that's
what I was imagining.
Except way prettier than a theremin. I enjoy a theremin.
You can do stuff other than the Star Trek intro.
Right, exactly.
Here it is. Stuffin.space.
Ah,
nice. STUFFIN. And it will scare you, or at least it scared me, wondering what was going to come down on us.
All of it.
Yeah.
You know about the whole thing? It was like a week ago. There was this I think it was like a meteor or something was supposed to almost hit us.
Allegedly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it even though it was basically like tens of thousands of miles away, but still.
Yeah.
And that one is going to go past and then come back.
Yeah.
Don't know how long that'll take.
Too close for comfort.
Yeah, I'd heard about that one. No, yeah, this is unsettling.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff. And how far out it goes. Like, it's not just around our dirt ball, low Earth orbit stuff. It goes way out. All the trash we've done put in space.
I'm on the same one.
Stuff in space.
Why don't I see as much stuff?
Maybe Zoom?
Maybe you got it.
Can you zoom in and out?
Yeah.
I think this is a pretty accurate representation of what we...
JavaScript was a mistake.
Or if this iMac is just like, I can't render all the stuff.
Do you even ES12, bro?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I've got the Earth and it shows some orbits and stuff, but yeah. Hmm. That's a lot of stuff there.
It's a whole lot of stuff.
I think it's a pretty accurate representation of what
we have
as a species
sneezed trash everywhere.
Yeah. We're a terrible virus.
Yeah.
Let's zoom out and then we'll just take it on in.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Unsettling.
Through all the junk.
Yeah.
Yeah, good times. All right.
Which makes me wonder if you can, if we can shoot radio signals off a meteor scatter, can we space, like, shoot it off of space junk? We can bounce it off the moon. We can do meteor scatter. We can bounce it off of planes. I wonder if we can bounce it off of trash.
I would say, well, we couldn't.
Theoretically.
Got to be reflective. You just got to know what trash is where and
how to get it there.
It has to be a certain size of trash, probably.
Most likely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certain,
And a certain alloy,
small,
maybe.
It'll miss.
But some of that trash is
because they probably
trash.
Only have a certain radius of accuracy.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it has to be pretty big, like the moon or.
Sure, yeah.
Well, what size are the, like, when we're hitting birds with our, like.
So CubeSats.
Radio, those aren't very big.
No, they're pretty small. Yeah. I want to say they're 2 or 3 feet square. So they're not real big. But see, we're not. With those, we're not reflecting the signal off of them. They're carrying a
repeater.
That's
true. They got a repeater on them. That's a good point.
So they've got an antenna coming out. But and I don't know how big the pieces of meteor are whenever we do meteor scatter work. But I say we. I've only witnessed meteor scatter happen. I've not done it myself. So
yeah. I also like to use the royal we when I refer to NASA and things.
Indeed.
We've landed on the moon.
Yes, we have.
I have had the opportunity to use another person's station to do Earth, Moon, Earth, and that was neat.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't do it with my equipment. It's where you send a radio signal and bounce it off of the moon and bring it back down.
Oh, wow.
It's very cool. And we did Morse code, and it was really terrible, but it was neat that we pulled it off, you know.
Right.
So, and I must underline that I had none of the technical knowledge for it other than Morse code, and general radio principles. He was guiding me through the whole thing, but it was neat to have my hand on the key whenever it came back.
Yeah, what kind of rig did that require?
Yeah.
It was an HF rig. I'm trying to remember what band we were on, but it wasn't much of one. It was mostly antenna that was the thing.
Yeah.
Mostly directional.
Was it a big
antenna? Yeah. So
I'm guessing he did not live in a neighborhood.
No, it's out in the country, but it's just neat to be able to bounce stuff off. The coolest thing I've ever done, I think, in that aspect is managed to hit tropospheric ducting with a little handheld radio and talk it up into Joplin with 2 watts.
Really?
yeah. So that was cool.
Is that, wait, you don't have a Baofeng. You've got the
it's a Yaesu. Yaesu FT60R. Yeah. And I did it with a little whip. Ran out in my front yard. I heard people talking from Joplin, and I thought, that's tropospheric ducting. Because there's no way I could pick those people up from where I was. So that's kind of crazy to look at. Hit that on your Wikipedia sometime. It's the only magic we have left, I think.
Radio? Or specifically tropospheric ducting?
Radio.
Yeah, radio is magic. No. The only radio, like, that was one of the great things about working with an RF engineer at the radio station, was that dude was an alchemist. Like, there's no question. And he, like, stuff would happen, and he'd just be like, solar flares. And we're just like, yep, obviously. We've angered Ra, the sun god, and now we don't get to listen to fresh air.
Meanwhile, we say that, and we're quoting the bastard operator from hell, right?
So, yeah, I totally agree, though. Like, I mean, I'm far from like I'm just technician class and have a ton to learn, Morse code aside, but like just the basics of radio, just RF engineering and all that is still like super impressive and amazing and just beyond me at this point. Though I know if I had time, like that's one of the things.
That's the other thing, time and effort. If you put the same time you put into it that you put into this career, then you would be on top of
it. And that's precisely it.
But like, you're a programmer instead of a radio image engineer,
Yep.
Yeah, only so much time.
I could understand it, but instead I'm learning how to interface with WebGL. yay!
To track space junk?
Yeah. Dirt junk. Dirt junk, exactly.
I don't really get sometimes the obsession people have with space.
No.
Oh, man.
Well, that's terrifying. Like, I try not to.
I don't really get it. Like, there's so much on Earth that we don't even know, but we're over here, like, waiting. It's like looking at the neighbor's lawn.
You know what,
like,
mostly?
That's better.
Yeah.
You know what mostly's in space?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Lots of space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the ocean. There's all kinds of stuff.
That's what I was
going to
say. I wonder if we put as much fascination in the ocean as we did on space, what that would produce.
Yeah.
But we're just like, it's salty. They're sharks.
It's salty. We put trash in it.
Yeah.
Considering we built rockets and we can't make a submarine that'll go down far enough
to the deepest depths.
But we make movies about it.
That's
Actually, I've not seen that movie. I don't know that I have plans to either.
I think of Sphere by Michael Crichton, which I don't think I ever saw the movie, but I remember I read the book.
Not your bag.
Yeah. That book wrecked me. I read that.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I want to say I was a teenager. Is it that old?
It is.
Because I saw the movie when I was a teenager.
I was about 11 probably when I read it. I wasn't into it.
Yeah, I read the book and I was done. I'm just like, all right, this is too much for my pea brain.
No more ocean?
Nope. Don't need it.
It was very, Sphere was a lot like.
Boil it all off.
A lot like Event Horizon, really.
Yeah,
it was the story. It was almost the same story was Event Horizon.
When was it? Well,
one was underwater, one was in space. Yeah. But same kind of thing. They discovered a relic that ended up driving them mad because ultimate power and
good times.
All that. Yeah.
And then there's also a land area that nobody's been in either, at least that we know of, nobody's been there.
That's what I was wondering whenever we went to Colorado a couple weeks ago. Like, I was like, man, you know, just think there's got to be spaces out there in the Rockies that people have just not been. Like, at least I want to believe that anyway. Yeah,
a whole mess of them.
Yeah, whole mess of them. Actually,
that's right. A group of Bigfeet are called a mess.
If you're from here, anyway,
I saw me a mess of Bigfeet the other day.
The Amazon and the Himalayas and all that.
And
some
African jungles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I'm laughing at you because this morning I called Dial-A-Trade.
No, you. And yes.
My son said, "Do you have to talk like that when you're on Dial-A-Trade?" This is how I talk.
My wife points out, like, as whenever we drive and if we go down to like Crawford County, anytime we get out into the woods. My dialect immediately just changes, and I'm not even really aware of it.
Right.
It's when I get to the family. I have to speak standard American English, and that's what I explained to him, especially programming. Talking to the company I work for now is in California. They all speak standard American English. And when I come out there, you know, dirt, it gets real bad. And so I've thrown some colloquialisms out and have gotten into some trouble. So
out in the woods, it don't matter, though.
No.
None whatsoever.
for those of you who wouldn't know what Dial-A-Trade is, that's a local radio show that you just simply call in and either request something and tell what you'd be willing to pay for it and give your phone number, or you sell something or trade it and you say what you'd like for it and give your phone number. And it's beautiful. It's one of the most amazing experiences. To sit and listen is great. I've called, and I think I requested kittens once. Like, I was looking for a cat.
I was selling knives this kittens. Morning.
You sold knives?
I was selling knives you were this selling morning. Knives yeah, I got a couple calls.
Yeah, yeah. No, nice.
I don't even know what this is.
No, it's Dial-A-Trade.
You need to check it out. 805, 105, and 505, Monday through Friday.
That's right.
On the mighty 790 AM.
I'm going to put Dial-A-Trade on the radio in here one day, and we'll all enjoy Dial-A-Trade. It's amazing. And I remember the first time I showed a friend of mine who was not from this region Dial-A-Trade, and the woman called, and she was smoker's coughing through the whole thing, of course. But she said, I've got seven pallets of freezer bags.
And that's Dial-A-Trade.
Two spare tires.
Yeah.
And I want to trade them for a four-wheeler. My number is 479-555-4444.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
And that's Dial-A-Trade.
Thank you, caller 13.
Yeah, caller 13, you're on Dial-A-Trade. And that's it. Like, that's the whole, it's an hour of that, it's amazing. Mm. It's and wonderful. It's people, sell, like, my favorite thing about Dial-A-Trade. You can sell guns all day long, but you can't sell firewood.
You can now. They've changed the rules. Changed firewood.
Whatever. The moment they would, but like up until, I guess, whenever they changed that, the moment
Why
you mentioned
they
firewood,
before?
They dumped the call because you couldn't sell it because of cross state line, like funguses and things like that.
Messing up
the ecosystem. And so if you mention firewood, they dump your call faster than that. But you could be like, I got seven shotguns and four ARs so you can shoot all the liberals. Call me up at 444 Freedom.
That's it.
And that was totally legal.
Yep.
Who is going to sell firewood, though? Why can't you just use it?
There were three people today that was selling firewood, and they had several ricks for sale.
Oh, yeah. Firewood is legitimate. Economic
powerhouse.
Yeah. You got to go on Craigslist to look for firewood.
I mean, I guess if you have a if you really live out there and you have a bunch of trees.
Oh yeah, well these guys do,
and they there was a whole lot of firewood for sale after the big storms we had recently.
I bet.
Ooh, yeah.
I bet.
Yeah.
Hey, we need to use this. Oh, you want me to grab him?
Hey man, okay. I can't see him.
Yeah, he was peeking around curious, and I didn't see him flagging.
Oh, okay.
So we're helping him out here. Get him on his way. So
he appreciated the sign you put up there.
Which one?
On the door. The men's restroom.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
He got a kick out of that sign.
Oh, we lost the women's.
That's because we didn't have a women's restroom for a while.
Yeah. And well, in the woman's one we had like that, it fell off.
No, no, I'm sorry. It was the men's restroom that was shut. And so,
yeah,
we were all using the ladies' room.
But yeah, the my wife was up here and she was like, "Oh man, the one fell off the women's restroom."
Oh, the which sign? The pee your pants sign or the we're all progressive use the bathroom?
Oh, I forgot about that sign.
Pee your pants sign was up there.
Okay, yeah. We had ladies and men's pee your pants signs.
Mm-hmm. Did you 3D print it?
Cody did, cool. Casey's brother. Because at the office before this one, we have one bathroom.
Yeah.
And so that's where it made tons of sense. So we put them all on that one bathroom because we'd all go to lunch together sometimes. And
you guys are really growing, by the way. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks. Good to see you.
It's
good times.
Yeah.
Good days at Lofty.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was a while where we couldn't get the landlord to fix the bathroom, the toilet in the men's room.
Yeah.
So we had to slap a sign on the men's room. Toilet's broken. We're progressive here. Use the ladies' room.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a one-seater, so it's no big deal.
Sure, right. We fixed it with a paperclip about six times.
Yeah.
And then they came and fixed it with a paperclip.
With a paperclip. After we told them, like, it's really broken.
It's really broken. Probably just need to replace the hardware. Yeah. They just replaced it with some more wire.
They're like, no, I just grabbed the paperclip y'all used. I bent it harder.
Yeah.
It should be fine now.
Yeah, my bad. I didn't have my pliers with me to get that extra twist out of the little bit of paperclip left.
Probably get some pliers on Dollar Tree.
probably so. Yeah. Ah, good times.
Yep.
That looks so much like X-Earth without all the space junk around it.
It's supposed to be the stuff in space.
Yeah.
But I don't have the stuff in the space. It does. It's like they're there, but they're not there.
Shame.
I know. I think it's this old iMac. That's like, I can't render all that.
Good times.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of space junk, I think that's an episode.
It is. That's an hour and six minutes.
Woo.
There we go.
Good stuff.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, man, thanks for
having me out. I'm sorry I didn't know anything about what you're talking about this time.
No, we don't know. We don't know what we're talking about ever. Yeah.
That's the way we do it.
Uh-huh.
We just ramble like we do.
See, Tyrell's just tired of staring at the sun now.
Yeah.
Since that's happened. That's all. That's why he's like, I think we got an episode now.
I can't see anything anymore.
Yeah. That's why I left yesterday, because the sun was really? Like... part of it, because the sun was like right in my eyes. I'm like, okay, I can't do this.
Was it bouncing back from your monitor even?
It was.
Or were you at your desk and that was the problem? Or were you somewhere?
Yeah, I was at my desk, because the sun, their window comes right at my desk.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we've got the shade down.
Mm-hmm.
Shade's down. Oh, yeah. Still just drilling me.
Yeah.
In the
Need
face.
To tint those windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you could just put a pillow in front of it like
that works.
Like we used to
like
do.
Like we used to do. We've stacked some stuff.
I was fond of the aluminum foil.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Man, I stayed
Kevlar.
I've worked at night before.
Yeah, that's the like someone's either trying to sleep or they're cooking meth. I slept over at a friend's house who foiled their windows out, and we stayed up late, but no later than we normally would have as like late stage teenagers. And then I slept till 3 p.m. and woke up and was like, "Oh God, never again!" Mm. Like this will steal your life.
Mm. Yeah,
and he's just like, "Well, what's the problem?" He's like, no, buddy. My day is gone now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
But some people need it.
Yeah, they do. If you're working them nights.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Good been times. There before.
Yeah.
Glad I'm out there now.
For sure. Beats digging a ditch.
Mm-hmm. Certainly does.
In the rain.
And getting up at 2 and working for UPS. Yeah. I did that for a minute. That was
past.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody. Hustlin'.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.